how a lot of communities should be. And unfortunately, it's just not that way. Mm-hmm. But when you come here, you do feel a sense of peace and welcoming, mm-hmm. and love. And that's what, you know, that's what carries me a lot of the time, is that I know that there are more good people in the world than there are bad.
I'm Elle McFarland. This is the conversation with Elle McFarland.
I'm broadcasting live from George Floyd Square. I'm going to go to Sheriff Dewana Witt. Hand her the microphone there. And Sheriff, thank you for being here. You're the chief law enforcement officer for Hennepin County. Thank you for the work you do, the leadership you provide. I know it's a difficult job, but as you see the community and your team organizing to respond to the feeling and the hurt in the community around the anniversary of George Floyd's death, how do you prepare? What do you think? What are your thoughts?
Well, you don't prepare, you just be your authentic self. And when you're hurting, you're hurt. When you need to cry, you cry. When you need a hug, you ask for that hug. For me, I actually grew up in this community. The Boys and Girls Club that's at Phelps Park, it used to be on 36. I used to trot myself to the Cup Foods, go to Powderhorn Park. So this is my community. The day after Mr. Floyd died. How I learned about this was that 17-year-old girl's video. That's how I saw it on Facebook. That's the first time I heard about it. And I took myself to work. At the time, I was just the major at the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, not necessarily the sheriff. And, you know, there's some of my staff that are here with me, but there were tears in our office. We're like, what's about to come next? But something I'm going to is the unrest that occurred after. And specifically downtown. You know, I've been in this field for 24 years now. I am that kid that grew up in this very community who did not like police, who did not trust police, did not think that they were for me. And those are because of my own lived experiences. So for me now to be in this field 24 years later, I will tell you from the day I started till this very day, I always said I'm going to be who I needed to see, who my siblings needed to see. But being on the front line of some of the unrest that went on, and then there were people that looked like me that would call me names, was the first time I ever questioned, what am I doing? Am I on the wrong side of the law? What's going on? But I had to check myself. Because you know what? We need representation everywhere, and we need people to embrace. You are who you are. Don't forget where you came from. And how do you make this world better? So I forced myself to continue to go out there to talk to people who were angry, not at me, at this profession, right? Because I worked too hard to give up now. You know, I told people that it was an accident. It wasn't. God knew what he was doing with me. And I have no doubt I was where I was supposed to be, when I was supposed to be there, to make sure again, as a person who came from this community to represent for people who are overlooked, who are not heard, who are not taken serious, and not forgetting where they came from. So I have a purpose in all of this too. And being authentic is the only thing I know how to do. Even though with this profession, sometimes they try to conform it where you have to be like a robot, that's not me. So as much as I was hurting, with you, for you all, honestly, I had to keep showing up, and I knew I had to keep using my voice at that table.
Sure. Let me ask you then,
what is needed to bridge the gap between and trust between police and community? How do we do that?
When you talk about having a beat in the community, you got to be a part of that community. You know, I'll tell you, years ago, when I first worked for Hennepin County, they would not promote me because they said I knew too many people who went to jail from the community. I had family members that went to jail from the community, so I couldn't be trusted. And then 16 years later, I come back as a major, right? Here, yeah, okay, I gave y'all a break, but now I'm back. You're right, I knew people in jail. who were part of the community. Yep, I had family members, oftentimes in jail, that were a part of this community. The people in our jails are a part of the community. And so when we talk about how do we bridge this, you really have to embrace being a part of the community. You can't say, because I know it goes 4th, 5th Avenue and know your streets, but who live in this house? Who owns this store? You know, talking to somebody recently about just policing, I did an internship in the UK to compare American policing to how they do it over there. But I remember them talking about how the first 3 months of being a police officer, you didn't get a car. You were on foot beats because that made you have to interact with people. We're too short to do things like that right now. But you know what? It isn't rocket science. It's going back to the basic. You will not do that without interaction. You will not do that without communication. You will not do that with completely being able to embrace people. Even if they look different than you, if they pray different than you, it doesn't matter. I'm a person who say, I don't expect you to trust me because I have a uniform on. I expect to earn that trust. And you're gonna get that because we're gonna interact and we're gonna talk. Again, being that girl who did not like, did not trust, who was afraid of police. And people ask me, how is it that you're doing this now? It happened through interaction, communication, learning people. And yeah, you know what? There's a lot of good police officers, deputies out there, and there are bad ones who make it bad for everyone. But I can't let them win. We do need to hold ourselves more accountable as a profession. But you know what? We also need the good people who got into this for the right reasons to stay.
That's right.
So that we can bridge this gap between community and policing. You cannot conform. You can't be somebody else. Be yourself and embrace it. Embrace it. I've been told, you know, you're a leader. You're not supposed to cry. Something make me sad, I'm gonna cry. I'm a crybaby. sorry, my assistant's back there and I'm a pick on her. But you know, one day, and it just always stuck with me when she came to me as a sheriff and she goes, we're not used to this many people having access to the sheriff. People should have access to the sheriff. I take my oath seriously. And if I'm truly going to represent the community, how am I going to do that without having access? We all know we're told things, we're told stories, but are you hearing it from the people that are on the front line? Right? And I do mean community by that. So, and I like to talk a lot, so it's a bonus.
We're glad you're here, and we're glad you like to talk and communicate. Go ahead and applaud. That's great. That's great. City Council Member, 8th Ward Representative Andrea Jenkins. There should be a microphone over there. Andrea, if you see one, you have it on. Welcome and thank you for being here. Take us back to that day. You were president of the Minneapolis City Council when you learned about, and this is your ward. And you lived here for a long time. You're embedded.
25 years.
See, so you know this community. What happened? How did news come to you? What did you feel as Andrea, a human being? But also you have this responsibility. You are the president of the Minneapolis City Council. Take us back to that day.
Wow. I'm so glad you framed the question in that way, Al. Before I give any remarks, I do want to just offer my really deep and sincere condolences to the family and to our community, because I know people are still grieving, still traumatized, still hurt. And I know that because, as you stated, Al, this is my community. I live here. I'm here in the square. I see Angela. I'm like, I don't know how you do it, Angela. I'm like everyone else, but you're here and you show up. You know, that I learned about the murder of George Floyd that morning of May 26th, about 1:30 in the morning. I got a call from the mayor's public safety aide. And she asked me, had I seen the video? I said, what video? I don't know what you're talking about. And she was sobbing. She was in tears. And, you know, so I went online and I started trying to see if I could figure it, what she was talking about out. And it didn't take too long. I got to Nakima Levy Pounds. She was Levy Pounds at the time, mm-hmm. page. And there was the video. And I saw the video. I watched all what we thought was 8 minutes and 46 seconds, but we learned later that it was more like 9+ minutes. Mm-hmm. And I thought about my great grandfather, his father, my father who was incarcerated for 15 years of my life, and just so many Black men that have been disabused by our systems of, quote, justice, right? And we know that policing in America started as a form of control over enslaved Africans. And that has persisted throughout history through Jim Crow and lynching, and all of these things were just going through my head as I was watching Derek Chauvin with his knee on George Floyd's neck. And then subsequently, the next day, there was a press conference. And, you know, as the, actually I was the vice president of the council then, but the president was out of town. It was mm-hmm. Memorial Day weekend. Mm-hmm. The president was out of town. And so I was the leader of the council. And, you know, I got up to the podium and I had my remarks all laid out. And the spirit told me, we need some art in this moment. We need some healing. And when I opened my mouth, Amazing Grace just started pouring out of me. Because I think that's what we needed in that moment. And I think that's what we continue to need right now is grace for each other, for our communities. And, you know, I think back to that day when everyone in town showed up at this intersection. And if you all recall, we were in the middle of a global pandemic. Mm-hmm. And we hadn't seen people for months. And thousands of people showed up at this intersection, and it was like a family reunion. It was so much love and care and support for each other. There was anger. But really, there was.
Let me jump in there. Let me have you sit with that for a minute. I haven't heard this said before. Mm-hmm. So I understood and felt and would understand people rushing to the street mad, angry, ready to tear it down. But you're saying that there was something different afoot. Absolutely. Talk about that. Tell me more about that.
No, it was completely different from that. It was really a sense of we have to come together as a community and hold each other right now because of the pain of watching that video. Was so intense. And, you know, there were people who made speeches and people who talked, but there was no anger until, and, you know, from here, people marched down 38th Street, headed towards the third precinct. And they were singing songs of, you know, peace and love, we shall overcome. I mean, it was a beautiful thing. And so when I heard the news, you know, I'm mobility challenged, I couldn't march with the crowd. But when I heard the news that there was an uprising at the third precinct, I was actually surprised, because the feeling at George Floyd Square, it was 38th in Chicago then, it's now George Floyd Square, but the feeling that was there was one of, we are here to support each other. That was the feeling of love, community, and support.
Jordan Powell Karras, Jordan Powell Karras is an artist. And if you've come down to George Floyd Square, you see statues that celebrate and commemorate the events of this time that we're speaking about. Jordan, what have you done? Talk about your work, what you've created, and what's been the motivation.
So I showed up here after I saw the city on fire. I was living in Denver at the time. I drove across the country. I had a truck full of tools. I thought I would fix up a shop on Lake Street. Everything was already boarded up. I was called by my community, you know, friends and such, come down to 38th Street. That's where people are at. And we quickly, in about 2 days' time, constructed the original fist statue. It wasn't meant to last. I assumed it would have been destroyed, burnt down, something would have happened. I had to go back to Denver to work. When I showed back up 6 months later, it was standing, and the summer of uprising had happened, which was this community coming out day after day, doing mutual aid, supporting each other, standing with each other, doing many, many more art projects, having food out regularly, medical tents, people's closet, people's way. All these things were coming about. It was really magical to see. And they said, can we continue to make this last? I said, the fist wasn't supposed to last. So I tap in with, you know, Chicago Fire Arts Center. We get a metal fist built. And since then, it's been, you know, 4 years of keeping that going in my way of supporting it with this art. There's 5 fists here at George Floyd Square. How they come about, it's a very unique story in its own, too long to tell right here. But the overarching theme has been a divide from higher energy within our system, called our government, some of our political leaders that truly haven't stepped down and gotten to know the community. Like we said, it's been so important. And that disconnect has galvanized us here on the streets to persist. We say people over property. And until that's clearly what's happening, we're not gonna stop. We're gonna keep occupying this street. We meet twice a day at People's Way, and there's many ongoing various groups that have collected and become a thing here. You have Agape showing up. There's an original group of men that protected these streets. A lot of them that don't even feel safe to be here because of misalignments that have now happened since. You have GFGM that helped preserve the art. You have the businesses that have lasted and withstood, from the barbershop to Just Turkey and the laundromat. And, you know, it's truly a beautiful thing to still show up to and feel like we're doing something that might really be changing the world, because there are people showing up daily from around the world to tap in, and they get pilgrim guides and they learn about the space. But we're also taking it other places. We have the Twin Flames exhibit that's at ASU Art Museum for a 6-month stay that has 5,000 pieces of protest street art on display there. And you got over 500 people a week seeing it from there. Mm-hmm. And we're, you know, it just keeps continuing. So it really tells me that we haven't even started to get high on our mountain that we're climbing. We're just getting going here. Because again, you go into the world, everyone's dealing with the police. No one likes the police from their roots. Everyone wants to feel safe and says we need some sort of security. But I went to high school in Linden Hills. Police don't come to Linden Hills. Why? Because they're well-resourced. You know, if this North Minneapolis, if this South Side, 38th in Chicago is well-resourced, we wouldn't need the police either. It's that simple, you know? So where does that stem from? And we got a war machine causing the genocide in Gaza. That's where our money's been going recently.
Come on.
Let me respond to that, Chair.
I think that we do need police, but I don't. Enforcement, because law enforcement is one action. In Minnesota, our license are licensed peace officers, and police can be a resource, but I want to acknowledge, I get it. Good policing, good people, people that lead with humanity, because there are still people out there that do prey on the weak and the vulnerable. There are people that do that, and who's going to protect them? You know, I keep bringing it up. My grandmother, North Minneapolis resident, 83 years old, her townhome's been shot in 3 times. Who is going to stop that? But we also need to acknowledge that, like I said before, police have to be a part of the community. We cannot just be showing up where we're responding to things. We have to be proactive, be there before things happen, build those relationships, and have a real relationship. Because there are always going to be people out there that prey on the vulnerable and weak.
And so what I think, Jordan, I appreciate your comment. I think you are clear, and it's appropriate to articulate the vision of a community that is self-reliant, that is not dependent on an external power to keep order. And I think that's the same thing you're saying, Sheriff, is that we have to see ourselves as the authority, as community. And Andrea, city council member for this neighborhood, same question. How do we, I'm so proud that you were elected and that you were elected chair, proud that Keith Ellison was elected attorney general. I'm proud of the number of Black and Brown people who are now serving in Minnesota State Legislature. The numbers are phenomenal. We've never had it before. And these leaders now are changing and turning the levers of power and resource to our communities in ways they've never done before. I think that's major. Andrea, what do you think?
I think that's true. I'm deeply proud to be of service in this community. I ask myself, how did I end up being here at this time? And it's for a reason. And it's true that change is happening, but it's not enough. We need much more. And I do think that we have leaders in place in the legislature, in as the attorney general, as the sheriff, and other roles that can help to bring those kinds of changes that we need to see to help bring resources to this community. It's a phenomenal thing to be serving in these roles, and yet we have to keep pushing for more change.
Okay, great. I'm Al McFarland. This is the conversation with Al McFarland. We've got about 10 minutes left for the program. I wanted to bring a couple of more voices in. I think John is here, or Thomas Berry is here, and Kellis, I think. Sheriff, thank you. Sheriff's got to leave. Thank you so much. Andrea, thank you so much as well. And I want to bring a couple more people. Al Flowers and Mark Anderson are here. And then Kellis is here, I believe. You have a seat right here. So we're making this happen as we go. But you guys have to be very quiet. One more thing to say. Go right ahead. Go ahead.
Hey, it's important that we say their names.
Bring you back on the camera. Can you bring the camera back on, Cooper?
You can see him.
Okay. Go ahead.
It's just a quick response to some of what was said is, if we say their names, specifically the names of such people have fallen, taken by police since George Floyd, we got Amir Locke, we got Winston Smith, We got Ricky Cobb. We got Takel Sundberg. There's so many here in Minneapolis. And that's the proof in the pudding that this work is so unfinished and we got so much more to do. So you got to say their names. George Floyd.
There we go. Thank you so much. Thank you, Jordan P. Karras. We're going to go for the last few minutes here, touching on two different things. I have to ask people in the studio to be quiet so that we can, we're broadcasting. It's difficult to hear, but have a seat. And Al Flowers is here along with Mark Anderson. Al and Mark, you're working with the
community.
I need you all to be quiet for me. Okay. Go ahead. You have a seat. Al Flowers and Mark.
Mark Anderson.
What's going on with your work now? Just tell me quickly, what's the status of the work you're doing with the police community relations? Trying to get some quiet, just because we're broadcasting. People that are not on the air, please go outside, because you're interrupting the broadcast. Please go outside. Please go outside. Thank you. And please do not talk, because we have to do the live program. Thank you so much. Al Flowers, Mark Anderson, Reverend Bethel's not here, but give us a quick update on what you're doing with the Unity Community Mediation Team, UCMT. Yeah. Pick up the microphone there.
Not the headset, but the microphone. There's a microphone there. You guys can share that.
Just hold and speak to just one.
Okay, just
yeah, go ahead. Talking to that.
No, Al, one thing we know, I know you had the Attorney General here, Ellison, why it's so important, especially for the African American community. We got to see how we rebuild these relationships. And, you know, and the Attorney General said something, I was sitting there listening, that we know an incident going to happen again. But what the UCMT did is trying to, we formed sites and all over the city of Minneapolis, in north, south Minneapolis, where people could come and file complaints at, so you don't have to go downtown. And that's what we've been working on, the community engagement part mostly, so we can rebuild these relationships, especially with the African-American and Native community who suffered the most under this. So that's what we did. We had a mentorship. We met with some of the incoming recruits yesterday, but before they get on the street, and we talked about our papers, our organizations, and things that they should go be involved in, volunteer, and be a part of. And that's what we got to do while we are continuing to do this fight, continuing to pray for the Floyd family. And that's what we've been doing now.
You know? We're going to have you come back to spend more time talking about that. I'm going to quickly go to Thomas Berry. Thomas Berry is with the Village Arms, and talk about the work you all are doing right now, Thomas.
So we just successfully got the African American Family Preservation Act passed through the state of Minnesota, which is a historic bill, which is reducing, you know, out of home placement for African American children throughout the state of Minnesota and throughout the Twin Cities. Khalees Houston was the she was tip of the spear of the bill. She's the one who stuck with it throughout the entire process. She is the author. I know that they keep on referring to her as a community partner. She's not a community partner. She was there when Jeff Hayden started with it and Rena Moran. She was there with Bobby Joe Champion and State Rep. Obaje. She's more than a community partner. She embodied the bill. She worked with the families. She had the pilot at Hennepin County for 3 years that showed that the bill was successful. So she did a lot of great work with this bill and for families. It's not about the individuals, y'all. It's about the families. So I'm just proud to be a part of that, to know that more Black families will be able to reserve that, you know, the children.
Thank you for that brief report. Really, we're out of time. This goes so quickly. We thank you all, but we're here tomorrow again. We'll continue the conversation. If you got some points you want to make, we're here to help you lift your voice, clarify your issues. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. Today, The Healing Circle, we're broadcasting live from King Demetrius Pendleton's Listen to Us studio here at George Floyd Square. We're here tomorrow, our first Saturday broadcast. Join us. We'll see you, and thank you.
A divine appointment.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFA.